Hour number two of the Blitz. Starting right now. AM, 105.7 FM. Live in your Fan Run Radio app. Live on the Fan Run Radio web browser. And that video feed, if you want to watch along at home, it's over on the Fox Sports Knoxville Twitter. Sam, why don't we get hour two started with an opening drive?
Let's do it.
All right. First down. Starting off the opening drive with some breaking news.
Breaking news. I think I see this as well.
Yeah, directly from the Twitter account of Lamar Jackson. He is reporting his own news. Tweeted about 10 minutes ago now. A letter to my fans. I want to first thank you for all of the love and support you consistently show towards me. All of you are amazing, and I appreciate y'all so much. I want you to know not to believe everything you read about me. Let me personally answer your questions. In regards to my future plans, as of March 2nd, I have requested a trade from the Ravens organization, for which the Ravens has not been interested in meeting my value. And any and everyone that's met me or been around me know that I love the game of football, and my dream is to help a team win a Super Bowl. Y'all are great, but I had to make a business decision that was best for my family and I. No matter how far I go or where my career takes me, I'll continue to be close to my fans of the Baltimore Flock Nation and the entire state of Maryland. You'll see me again. So, for the past month now, essentially, Lamar Jackson has requested a trade. Big deal, but also I also don't think it's actually that big of a deal.
No.
I don't really think the situation changes that much.
You think he gets traded or no?
I mean, I still think like there hasn't really been any other team that's willing to show, you know, the interest needed, I think, to trade for.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty hefty price tag, I would say. For a guy that you're going to have to lock up to a big deal as well. And if it's been since March 2nd, you know, how many teams have gone calling? Or have they at all?
Well, I mean, the fact that, like, you could already just go get him for the price of a couple of first-rounders,
right,
which is probably what it was going to take in the first place to sign him. To acquire him via trade. Yeah, again, like, I don't think this changes anything. Because you know he's been negotiating publicly to a certain extent. You know what Lamar wants. Immediately when he was put on, you know, like, the tag, but the non-exclusive tag where you can give up those two first-rounders and you know, get him.
Mm-hmm.
From the second he was put on that deal, you know, you immediately had six quarterback needy teams that were linked to Lamar Jackson come out and immediately say, we're not interested. And everyone freaked out. Oh, it's collusion. No, it's this. Oh, it's that. How could they not want Lamar? No, it's because his price is public. You know, how could you not know if you want without even negotiating with Lamar? You know, he's too expensive, or you don't want him on your team. Because we've seen the contracts he's turned down, so I think it's pretty easy for some of these teams to say, all right, well, Lamar is a very good quarterback, but he's not an elite quarterback. He's just very, very good. You know, can we pay a very, very good quarterback this much money and go win a Super Bowl with him? With the roster that then you would have, you know, around him? Because you'd also have to build your roster around his unique style of play. Like, I just think too many teams weren't all that interested. So if they weren't interested in getting him from that non-exclusive tag with, you know, the two first-rounders that you'd have to give up, are they really going to trade for him?
Yeah,
again, I don't think it changes much.
I mean, I think a smarter move career-wise for him would just be to play on the tag for a year and you know, go and try and test free agency next year and see what could happen. Because it's clear that nobody's gonna trade the draft capital to go and acquire you. Like you're saying, you're gonna kind of have to change the way that you play your brand of football. You're gonna have to trade what they're assuming is multiple first round picks, and then you're gonna have to lock him into a contract that would be a pretty hefty one. It sounds like he wants a lot of guaranteed money. It seems like he is, you know, that kind of seems like a lot of the holdup is wanting something kind of similar to that Deshaun Watson deal that he got with the Browns. I feel like almost it's like neither side are really wrong on this. The whole, you know, like Lamar wants to, he believes he's worth more than he is. The Ravens don't believe that. And I mean, you know, he's saying that he wants to go elsewhere and try and test the market and find someone else. I don't necessarily think the Ravens are exactly wrong for if he wants a fully guaranteed contract and something that's in the ballpark of that Deshaun Watson deal. I think with seeing half a season of Deshaun Watson already, you can probably say that contract is a pretty bad one. So I just don't think that. I don't think Lamar is going to gain much traction around the league by doing this, and I think he would just be a lot smarter to play on the tag for a year, see what he can do in free agency when somebody doesn't have to give up, you know, an arm and a leg to try and get him and then extend him into a contract.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, the Ravens hold all the leverage.
So much. All of it. He doesn't have anything.
No, I mean, he can either choose not to play football or he can play for the Ravens.
But yeah.
Again, like, him requesting a trade
and choosing not to play football,
nothing
affects him negatively next year when he's looking for a new deal. So he's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, I mean, requesting a trade, in my opinion, changes nothing at all.
And I don't think there's a quarterback needy team out there that is desperate enough for a quarterback or has a roster that is, you know, plug in Lamar Jackson, you are a Super Bowl contender with what I have to give up, you know, draft capital wise and financially.
Right.
So,
and you know, if he's playing this year on a tag, maybe there's teams that can position themselves more, you know, towards being able to get him next offseason and build around him. But yeah, at this point, again, quarterback needy teams, the ones that have rosters competitive enough to win, have addressed the quarterback position.
Yeah, or don't want to give up the draft capital to.
Yeah, and you know, the ones that haven't addressed their quarterback position don't have rosters that can win with Lamar.
Right.
Because, again, Lamar is a really good quarterback. Like, don't get me wrong. He's probably about the eighth best quarterback in the NFL. But he wants top two quarterback in the NFL type money. He wants, you know, win in spite of the roster money. He wants, you know, I can be the driving force to a Super Bowl type money. And I just don't think that's the quarterback he is. I think he's one of those really good quarterbacks that still needs to play in a specific type of offense with a very specific type of personnel around him, and that becomes increasingly more challenging if you're paying him the type of guaranteed money that he's asking for. I mean, again, I just... It's not about saying Lamar is bad. I think it's just about you have to be realistic with his value. You know, the Ravens don't miss. Like, I trust the Ravens organization more than I trust any of the talking heads in the media. I mean, this is the same team that were the geniuses that drafted Lamar Jackson in the first round. These are the same geniuses that drafted Lamar before Flacco, you know, had even shown signs of falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
Yet here we are thinking, you know, they don't know what they're doing. You know, this is an organization that doesn't really seem to make a lot of mistakes. One of the most respected, I think, well-run organizations in the entire NFL.
Right.
They knew Hollywood Brown was overrated. They traded him. Got great value for him, and Hollywood was aggressively mediocre. They don't cut people too soon. They make great trades. They don't waste free agency money. For the entirety of me and you's lives, we're, you know, 23, 21?
About to turn 22, yeah.
About to turn 22 on Friday. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
For the entirety of our
lives, the Ravens have always been good.
They've been known to not make mistakes.
Yeah.
And they offered him money. 3 years, $133 million guaranteed. It's not some lowball offer. They know his worth, and they're not going to give up more. That's just the Ravens. I mean, they built the entire roster around what he can do. You know, they know him better than anybody else. They had an offensive coordinator that was catered specifically to Lamar. A roster catered specifically to Lamar. They know his exact worth. So it's baffling to me that everyone is just assuming that the Ravens are making some terrible mistake when all we've known for at least me and you's entire lifetime is a Ravens team that makes excellent decision after excellent decision. But again, you know, requesting a trade, that's fine. That's a headline. You know, that's something to talk about. But I still don't think it means anything. And funny enough, too, that tweet comes at the exact time that John Harbaugh is meeting with the media. The exact time. So everyone scrambled over there immediately. Harbaugh said that they absolutely expect the Ravens to keep Lamar, for what it's worth.
Wonder how Todd Monken's feeling.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think if anyone can craft an even better offense or as good an offense for Lamar as Greg Roman did, I think it's Todd Monken. I mean, I think that could be a really perfect marriage. But again, you know, Lamar, I understand it from Lamar.
Yeah.
Do you think you're worth more? Like, you want to go get that money? I get it, but
the way he's doing it doesn't seem the best way.
Hurts. I don't think he's necessarily going about it the best way. And again, like, sorry, man. You don't have any leverage. And none of these other teams wanted you for the price that you're asking for either. Maybe that should tell you something.
Yeah. Yeah. Second down. Duke's point guard, Tyrese Proctor, returning for his sophomore season, said, "This is the best decision for my career, both present and future. Coach Shire and I same the same vision. We have unfinished business. We have the best staff in the country, and they will push me each and every day. It's all about winning, and that starts in the summer. Having a full offseason on campus will be extremely valuable for me, my continued development, and I'm looking forward to leading our talented incoming class." Tyrese Proctor really kind of emerged as one of the top guys for Duke at the end of the year, and one of the top point guards, you know, in all of the country, really. Should have been a senior in high school this year. He reclassified, 18 years old, so this year was the... This coming recruiting class was really the class he was supposed to be in. He's got a connection with some of the guys in there. He's got, you know, it was a little surprising that it's that's come out this quick, I guess. I would think that he would maybe test those NBA waters a little bit more with the season that he had towards the end of the year. 6'5 point guard, obviously. He's got just great shot making ability. Really great defender, becoming a better passer, but I guess he's, you know, coming back. Once another full season under his belt, kind of came in late in terms of, you know, when you come onto campus and everything last season. So he'll get a full off season with the team and everything. Said he's going to spend a couple months or a couple weeks back in Australia, see his sister compete, and then be right back to Duke, prepping for the season, meeting the new guys, and getting going. I was a little surprised, though. A little surprised that he didn't take a little bit more time on this decision. I thought that he probably could have been drafted fairly high, but, you know, maybe he's betting on himself, coming back for a sophomore year. Thinks he's got some unfinished business, can bolster that draft stock a little bit higher, get into the lottery pick range, see what's going on.
He's crafty, man.
He is crafty.
It's a big one for Duke.
It is big.
Probably helps, yeah, entice some people in the portal, too.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Think Duke's going to become a portal team?
I don't know.
Because Coach K definitely like wasn't really much
of a Coach K was not a portal guy at all. They did, I mean, Shire got a couple guys out of the portal this year that didn't necessarily, you know, have big minutes, but he did, I think he got maybe three or four. Got one from like Illinois, Northwestern, and then a couple of those bench guys from like the Ivy League schools that are just going to finish out like a master's degree or something.
Oh man. Third down. LeBron came back yesterday, or this weekend, yeah. Returned to action yesterday against the Chicago Bulls. Came off the bench for just the second time in his career. Only other time was when he asked back in 2007 to come off the bench to deflect negative attention away from Anderson Varejão. If you remember that back from 2007, I guess he used to be a good teammate. But he used to James suffered that foot injury back on February 26th. Some people thought he was going to be out for the year. I think there was some talk that he was at least going to be out until the postseason. Apparently, he found the LeBron James of feet.
Yes, I saw this. This cracked me up.
Which is how he described it, too.
Yeah.
A power move.
Yeah, he's describing himself as the GOAT now.
To use yourself as a descriptor for someone that's the best at their job.
Yeah.
Incredible.
I think he should have taken a shot at Michael Jordan instead. And I got the MJ of feet, guys. I got the second best foot specialist in the world.
Yeah, the first guy was busy.
He was busy.
In Tuscany with the family, but
I had to go for MJ
of feet doctors.
Yeah, I think he should have taken that shot.
What's like the Charlie Collier of NBA players? Like,
I don't know.
Juan Herman Gomez, man, he's like the Sam Beard of the NBA.
I like that.
Like, if we just start using our own names.
I think we should.
Yeah, you know, like, Checkers, it's pretty average, like, it's like the Charlie Collier of fast food chains.
You can get really offensive with that. Like, I think you could really piss some people off. That'd be a good one.
Yeah, Crystals, man, that's the real Houston crest of fast food chains.
Yeah, dude, you're kind of the Subway of deli sandwiches.
Yeah, you're really... Yeah, Subway is like the Adam Hickman of... It could be really offensive. Or it could be like a great compliment, too.
Yeah, huge, yeah.
Nate Hodges, man. Ruth Chris, that's like the Nate Hodges estate.
Nothing but class.
Yeah, LeBron found a fancy... The LeBron James of foot doctors, though. And you know that. There's something to it, because he was able to play yesterday. And thank goodness he was, because we got an all-time Twitter moment. Pat Bev, you know, was traded from the Lakers to the Bulls. Maybe LeBron induced, maybe it wasn't, but he's been talking. He's been letting the Lakers know about, you know, his feelings towards them and towards that game. And in the fourth quarter yesterday, he had a little hezzy hay, a little hooked, you know, half hook shot over top of LeBron. And then hit him with the too small. And it was the world's smallest, most aggressive, like, too small we've ever seen.
Yeah. And then he did, like, a little stink, too. He did, like, he pinched his nose, like, a little
PU. Stinks.
Yep. That was my bad.
Very good game. Very fun game. Sam closes down, fourth down.
Fourth down. A perfect night yesterday for the Hurricanes. And Jordan Miller... after their defeat last year, said, quote, that loss sat with me for a really long time. Didn't go away, and the fact that we had the opportunity to come back and make amends and make it right, that's what was really pushing me. It worked last night. Worked last night against Texas. Jordan Miller went 7-for-7 from the field, 13-for-13 from the foul line, finished with 27 points. We said it earlier, this Miami team is playing unbelievable. First time since 1979 that there hasn't been a team better than a four that's made the Final Four. And if I knew this yesterday, I would have hammered Miami. 17 years ago to the day, Jim Larranaga took George Mason there as an 11 seed. 17 years ago to the day. If I would have known that, I would have been all over Miami. He's now reached the Final Four multiple times as a 5 seed or lower. His second time, obviously, as I said, at George Mason, only trailing Tom Izzo, who's done it 3 times. Pretty good company. You got Tom Izzo 3 times, Jim Larranaga twice, Brad Stevens at Butler, and Larry Brown.
Shout out to the Hurricanes, man. Yeah, I know. I wish we would have taken that. Wish we would have known that. I mean, I bet on Miami anyway. But
talk about a deal for just Miami too. They're probably making so much money as an athletic, you know, just as an athletic program going to the Final Four and everything. Ruiz, John Ruiz, you know, the Miami booster, yeah. The NIL guy.
Lifelong.
Nigel Pack only got a 2-year, $800,000 deal. They're making, you know, 10 times that probably. Making it to the Final Four and everything. That's what you call a good investment right there.
Just saw this pop up on the timeline. Muskets taken from University of Tennessee dorm room.
Muskets?
Yeah.
Who has a musket?
University of Tennessee student was charged with carrying weapons on school property after police took 2 muskets from his dorm room.
Multiple muskets?
Yeah. The
Which dorm room?
Laurel Hall.
Okay.
University of Tennessee PD responded to Laurel Hall about 5 p.m. on March 25th. This comes from WATE. After dorm staff reported someone walking into the residence holding what appeared to be a musket.
They weren't even trying to hide it.
The student was identified through video surveillance, according to court documents. Officers made contact with him in the lobby of the hall, and they were given consent to enter his room, where they retrieved 2 musket rifles, black powder, primers, and 2 bayonets.
I mean, is this guy just doing like a Civil War reenactment?
That's what I'm thinking. Like, I don't know. Like, what else was he going to use these muskets for? Hopefully nothing. Devious.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, do muskets even like work nowadays?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like if he's carrying around a musket, like he just collects antique guns and is just open about it, I guess.
Surely he's got to know that you just can't bring a musket into a dorm room, though. Like, it doesn't matter if it's a... With a bayonet, you said? On the musket?
I don't think it was on the musket. He just also had bayonets.
Okay. Like, inside the... They do, like, a search of the room?
Yeah, they search his dorm, found multiple muskets, multiple bayonets.
That would be kind of absurd if they found, like, 40 muskets. Like, he's just a musket collector.
Yeah, I'm just a musket collector. I don't know. Where else do you want me to put my muskets?
Yeah, that's...
I mean, doesn't it take, like, a really long time to, like, in between shots?
Shots of a musket?
Don't you get 1 musket fire, and then you gotta, like, shove some things in a hole and put some things in there and do this and do that, and then you get 1 more musket fire?
Probably.
Is that not how muskets work?
I'm not well-versed in musket technology, but, man, that's wild. It's got me a little speechless, honestly. It's almost like you think they were like demos, just a fake musket. Like, where do you even? I just don't understand where you can buy a musket to begin with.
Muskets.com? I don't know. We'll catch a break. We'll switch gears on the other side. Stay with us here on the Blitz.
He said, "Hey, sister, it's really, really nice to meet ya. I just met this 5'7" guy who's just my type. Like the way he's speaking, his confidence is peaking. Don't like his baggy jeans, but I'ma like what's underneath it. And no, I ain't been to MIA. I heard the Cali never rains, and New York's wide awake. First, let's see the West End."
All right, back here on the Blitz. People are... The whole conversation about Lamar this entire time is so dumb to me. It's collusion. The Ravens are committing organizational failure. And all this other talk about Lamar. No, it's just simply that when you're negotiating publicly, everyone knows your price. They know what it would take to enter into negotiations with you. They can make that decision without having to negotiate. You know, it's simple. If he's turned down contract A, and you also don't want to give him contract A,
plus picks,
then you're out. Plus the picks, then you're out. And again, it's asking for a trade slightly changes the narrative. It doesn't change anything else. It's not like you're going to be able to trade for less than the two first that you could just give up to sign him with the non-exclusive tag. So everyone freaking out. I mean, fine, cool, whatever. But again, it's play for the Ravens or it's play for nobody.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anyone's trading for him. And I mean, I don't think anyone's negotiating or signing him on that non-exclusive tag either. But 11:32 on a Monday, that means it's time. Time to play a little good, bad, and the ugly. Start with you, Sam. What's your good from the weekend?
My good from the weekend, probably the second or third time I think I've said this on the show in the last couple months, but it's Caitlin Clark. Yesterday lifted Iowa to a 97-83 win over Louisville yesterday. She had 41 points, 12 assists, 10 rebounds. First 40-point triple-double in men's or women's NCAA tournament history. There hadn't been a 30-point triple-double in women's March Madness history before, and she had 41. Scored or assisted on 70 of Iowa's 97 points. 72%, if you want to put that into a little bit more context, I guess. This girl's just unbelievable. We're going to see probably the best game all year in the women's side, I guess. They're going to face the winner of tonight's matchup between Maryland and the defending national champion, South Carolina, who is virtually untouchable. South Carolina, I'm assuming we'll see South Carolina versus the best player in the country in Caitlin Clark. Should be a good time. What a performance by her, though.
40-point triple-double is just
unbelievable.
Absurd.
Unbelievable.
So absurd, man. She is incredible. Just an incredible basketball player. I mean, right now, what she's done for an entire season reminds me of the 2.5 hottest weeks of Steph Curry's career at Davidson.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's done it. It's been sustained.
You know what she wants to do, and it just doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she can just score and score at will from all levels of the court, from anywhere out there. I mean, she can just spray.
Yeah, she'll pull up from the logo. It does not matter. 6th triple-double of the season, 11th of her career.
My good from the weekend, Tennessee baseball.
Yes, sir.
Getting back into the win column in a much-needed series sweep of the Texas A&M Aggies. Wasn't easy by any means. Chase Dolander kind of got touched up a little bit in the first inning again Friday, but you were able to battle back and win that game thanks to a massive inning early. Bats started to finally heat up this weekend. And it wasn't great pitching for Texas A&M. You know, their bullpen not incredibly deep, but some decent top arms on that team, and you did a really good job piecing them up. A walk-off on Saturday, Jared Dickey probably had 2 home runs that both got blown directly back into the ballpark by the wind. But
that wind was unbelievable.
One of them landed. One of them was deep enough to be the sac fly to secure the winning run. And then yesterday, a 9-6 win, a massive day for Zane Denton. He got benched on Saturday after a pretty bad error at third base. I mean, just completely botched a ground ball. And then, you know, Sunday, I think part of it was just trying to space out lefty-righty a little bit more, but also maybe a little bit of a message to Zane Denton. He got put 9th in the batting order yesterday. Big-time response, though. He was the star of the day, a multi-home run day, his first of his career. He drove in 5 runs, reached base in all 4 of his plate appearances. He was 3-for-3, all again from the 9-hole. The bottom 3 of Tennessee's batting order yesterday combined to go 6-for-8 and accounted for half of the team's 12 hits.
That's not bad.
Blake Burke, Hunter Inslee had multi-hit days too. Dylan Dreiling, he had a big clutch pinch hit double with two outs to give the Vols a 6-3 lead. Again, the starters this weekend, Burns, Dolander, Beam, still kind of not playing at the level I think they were expected to.
Right.
They're getting a little bit better. You know, maybe Dolander at this point needs to change up his preparation. Now, I don't know if that's just kind of if that's really has anything to do with it or not, but the fact that in every game this year, even against Morehead State, he started games off poorly before settling in. You know, maybe that's something you at least need to have to, you know, to talk about.
For sure. It has been an uncharacteristic start, I guess, especially from last year. You know, it was just complete opposite of that. He came out of every single start, it seemed like he was just, it almost felt like it was three up, three down after every single start of his. So it is a little uncharacteristic to see him struggle. But it was good to get us back on track before we got a big series with LSU.
Tennessee baseball back in the top 10 of the D1 baseball rankings that came out earlier this morning.
There we go.
Your new top 10, LSU still stays at 1, Wake Forest still at 2. Florida is at 3, Vandy's at 4, Arkansas's at 6, South Carolina 9, and Tennessee 10.
So that it's just crazy how good the SEC is at baseball.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the top 10 teams from the SEC.
Just wild. Wild.
I mean, I guess it makes sense, though.
Yeah, it does. But, like, it's just, I don't know.
It's wild while also making sense. Like, when you think about it in the sense that, like, most of the best baseball players in the country, youth-wise, are in the Southeast, and the fact that the Southeast weather allows those players to play year-round rather than half the year, like, it makes sense, but at the same time, it still just is crazy to look at the top 10. It's like, oh, yeah, there's six SEC schools.
Solidifies my pick on the American Things draft. You know, shout out the SEC. Shout out the SEC.
Tennessee's next four series at number one LSU. Home against number three Florida. At number five Arkansas. Home against number four Vanderbilt.
Okay. We'll figure out a lot about our baseball team in the next four series.
Your next four series are against four of the nation's top five teams.
That is unbelievable.
That is a stretch of baseball that I think is incredibly rare.
Extremely rare.
That's insane. So, yeah, I mean, it's a Thursday series, too, against LSU. It's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You know, 4 days, you're going to be down on the bayou. It'll be time.
We'll take care of business again.
Yeah.
We'll take care of business again.
Absolutely.
My bad from the weekend. Charlie touched on it a little bit there. LeBron James and his father, Patrick Beverley, hit him with the too small celebration. I think if Pat Bev hits you as, you know, one, you know, probably a top two, maybe the best basketball player of all time, they got some bad blood there for sure. Pat Bev has been on his podcast pretty openly saying that LeBron just kind of talked too much in the Lakers locker room, demanded too much, just kind of held himself at a higher standard than everyone else. And I don't think Pat Bev really took a liking to that too much. Last night against him, had 10 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, an all right game for Pat Bev. You know, always comes off the bench. Interesting, though, LeBron is 6-10 against Pat Bev in his career. The only two players that have a higher winning percentage against LeBron in their career are Kawhi Leonard and Jimmy Butler. Shout out Jimmy, Charlie.
Shout out Jimmy.
But yeah.
Jimmy's just a more talented Pat.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. A little bit, he has more talent and a little bit less instigator in him.
And that's, they go hand in hand.
Yeah, they do. And then Kawhi Leonard is just a stone cold killer.
He's just a robot.
Yeah.
Really needs load management because, you know, supply chain issues. We don't really have his parts. They don't get in as quickly. The maintenance is a little bit more difficult. So a lot of load management for him, but he is a basketball robot. My bad from the weekend, it is the Tennessee Lady Vols.
Disappointing.
Yeah, to go to, I guess that was out in Seattle, right?
Yeah.
Out in Seattle, you know, you feel like you've built a lot of momentum in the back half of the season, heading into the NCAA tournament, to just exclamation wins in Knoxville in the round of 32 and the round of 64. You're an even money in an even money betting line, essentially, with Virginia Tech. You know, there wasn't a favorite in that game. And instead, you promptly go down 20 points. You know, you find a way to battle back, cut it down to one, but then you still end up losing by nine. At the same time, you know, you had a player, and I think it was, Jordan Walker, that just completely took a girl out, too. Just completely took a girl out. Like, side of the head and then a little forearm shiver finish all the way through. Didn't get called for a flagrant, didn't get reviewed just because the refs missed it. But just a bad look for a team that I think failed this year. You know, I saw a lot of articles floating around yesterday. I saw one over at, the Sentinel and some other places. You know, a season of almost for Tennessee. Tennessee right on the edge of some massive wins, picked up momentum in the back half of the season, figured some things out, and they're setting themselves up for what should be a big year in 2023-24. But it's like, hold up, did we not just have that exact same conversation last year? Like, this was supposed to be the year that you broke through. This was supposed to be the year that, you know, that you're right up there with the South Carolinas and the LSUs of the country. You had a great recruiting class. You got an elite transfer from Mississippi State. You had a lot of your talent returning. Like last year when Tennessee got bounced by Louisville in the Sweet 16. You know, you might as well, I don't know, maybe reporters just didn't want to work yesterday. Maybe they just copied and pasted the same articles from a year ago. But there's no more like building this program, stepping this program up, you know, setting the stage. Like the stage has been set and Tennessee, the Lady Vols have failed to deliver. Kelly Jolly Harper has failed to deliver, and that's what you get when you make a bargain bin hire, you know, just to go get someone that had ties to the university and ties to Pat Summitt to appease, you know, a certain portion of this fan base.
Yeah, but I think
Tennessee, again, you were one of the top women's basketball programs in the country. Go act like it. You know, LSU in that same time period,
yep,
they acted like it. They went, they put their nuts on the table. And they went and hired Kim Mulkey, one of the best coaches in all of the country. And she proved that a top program that has more resources than just about anybody else, when you invest in it with a top coach like Kim Mulkey, can very quickly be one of the best. Because Angel Reese and company down to the Bayou have punched their way through to a Final Four. And Kim Mulkey has had that program in a very good spot pretty much since she took over. And meanwhile, Kelly Jolly Harper has the Tennessee program looking like not the Tennessee program, looking like some scrappy up-and-coming, you know, team that they're building their way to being able to compete next year. That's not what Tennessee Lady basketball, like Lady Vol basketball, should be. The expectation should be higher.
Yeah. I agree. My ugly from the weekend. Refs, late in games. We see the finish in the Creighton-San Diego State game. Phantom foul. 1 second left in the game. I kind of get it, but it's just one of those things. As a ref, you got to know the situation, man. It's the Elite Eight. You're fighting for a spot to go to the Final Four. When it's just a bang-bang play like that and a real touchy foul, You just got to be able to choke your whistle there. You got to choke your whistle. There's a second left in the game. Let the game play out in its purest form. Don't try and get involved here and, you know, get some free throws and stuff like that. Let the game play out naturally. And then you see in the Texas-Miami game, down in late in the stretch, the call goes originally Texas's way. Fouls out. Was it Noshad Omir that got fouled out on that play? On the reversed call in the Miami-Texas game? I think it was Omir. I think it was Omir.
I'm
not 100% sure. I think it was Omir. So one of Miami's best players, a huge swing call, originally called on Miami on the floor, would have fouled him out of the game, about a minute left. That would have swung the game in a huge direction, would have given Texas two free throws. Both teams were in the double bonus at the time. They reverse the call. It's on Texas. Miami goes down and, hits both free throws, and they pull away. Not that that game is completely decided by refs like the Creighton-San Diego State game. Miami trailed by, 13 points with 13 minutes remaining, finished the game on a 37-17 run. They definitely deserve to win that game, but it's just tough to see in such an important stage and just so much on the line in those two games that the refs have to interfere in something like that.
I don't think there should have been a foul called on either Miami or Texas in that situation.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was just a simple case of, like, the box out's already been applied. The guy right. getting boxed out jumped, so he's naturally going to have the guy boxing him out get further under him. You know, if there's some contact or if someone falls, like, I don't think that should have been anything. Just let it continue to happen. As for San Diego State and Creighton, it's a foul. And I am one of those guys, it's like, you know what, if there is an obvious foul that doesn't in the last minute, just because it's the last minute doesn't mean you should swallow your whistle. But my issue is they let Creighton and San Diego State beat the hell out of each other.
Right, right.
For 40 minutes. You know, that
inconsistency.
That was not a foul that was called all game. So if there was a touchy whistle all game, if they were calling it tight all game, then continue to call it that way in the final minute and
agreed.
Call that foul. But if you're letting the teams play, if you're letting teams be physical, you know, there doesn't need to be an extra emphasis on the whistle once you get into the final minutes.
That was my biggest gripe on the Tennessee-Duke game,
right.
was that it was just such a physical game on both ends, and then you just get a couple weird touch calls, and it's like, well, if you're not calling these physical plays, then why are we getting so technical here?
I would prefer a game where both teams are allowed to play a little bit, but I just think you have to be consistent with
mm-hmm.
it. So, you know, in that situation, players know what to expect
right.
from the officiating.
Right.
You know, if they're letting teams be physical, then don't call someone, you know, grabbing the hip on a floater. Because there were guys grabbing hips and hand-checking every single play of that game. My ugly from the weekend, it's Mississippi State baseball. My goodness, how the mighty have fallen. Falling to 14-11 on the year. They've really played some bad baseball this year. And it just got even worse over the weekend. Vanderbilt came to town. 26-3 Friday night.
Yeah.
It was 10-1 after the first like two innings.
Yeah. I think it was 9-0 in the first.
Followed up a 26-3 loss by a much more competitive 18-5 loss.
We're getting there.
On Saturday. And then on Sunday, hey, they kept it within four, only lost 11-7. 37 plus 18, 47 plus 8, 55 runs in three games compared to your 15. 55-15 over the weekend for Mississippi State. They are awful.
It hasn't even just been this year, too. Like
They
haven't been playing good baseball since they went to a national championship and won.
Yeah, they won an Natty, and that was it. I mean, they're the Nationals of college baseball.
And they've got a nice stadium to show for it.
I mean, yeah, at least you got the dude.
Can we just drop that in Knoxville? Give them Lindsey Nelson?
Seems like a fair trade. No, I don't know. The dude's all they have. Can't take it from them.
They got cowbells.
Clanga, clanga. Ring the bell. But yeah, man, if there's a word worse than ugly, then it applies to Mississippi State baseball.
Yeah.
It's bad.
That was a thumping.
And it's quick.
Mm-hmm.
All right, best bet to wrap up the show, coming up on the other side. All right, wrapping up the show like we always do, with a little best bet. I know I have something I really like tonight. What about you? Anything?
I got an NBA game.
Well,
what are you looking
tell
at?
Tell me about it.
I am going to go towards the Bulls and Clippers game. Saw some stats today. Since the Bulls have added Pat Bev, top 5 record in the league, top 5 net rating, top 5 defensive rating, and a top 10 offensive rating. The Bulls tonight, +4.5, +160 against the Clippers. That's not going to matter. Let's take -4.5 for the Clippers. Bulls on a back-to-back. Flying, I guess still playing in the same arena. They played the Lakers last night.
So you got Clippers -4.5?
I got Clippers -4.5.
I think that's a good bet. I mean, I think the Bulls caught up too in the emotion of on a back-to-back, caught up from an emotional game yesterday, and also potentially maybe looking ahead to Wednesday getting to play the Lakers again.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those games against a good team that you slip in between. Yeah, that I think does kind of fall through the cracks if you're the Bulls. I like that bet. I'm heading over the XFL tonight. I've been betting on the XFL a lot, and I've been making some money, dude. It's been a lot of fun. Like,
yeah.
I've thoroughly enjoyed the XFL, and I'm not even, like, sarcastically, but legitimately looking forward to watching, like, Monday night XFL tonight.
Let's go.
Like, we have a 4-1 Houston Roughnecks team versus a 5-0 DC Defenders team. Like, that's legitimately a good game. The Defenders, with their quarterback combo of Jordan Te'amu and De'Aaron King, have just been electric. The defense is good. And DC is one of those teams, too, that's had a great crowd at their games. Think they're going to have another really good crowd tonight, try to extend that undefeated record. I'm taking the Defenders -2.5. We ride for DC, baby.
Let's go.
Go Defenders. If your XFL team isn't undefeated, don't talk to me. But good show today. We'll see you again tomorrow morning, same time, same place. But for Sam Beard, I'm Charlie Collier. Y'all have a great day. Talk Sports is up next.